Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapelake Raelian, along with Tom Luongo. This week, the Mono strikes in Columbus, jersey fouls happen in Montreal, their contract extensions in Detroit, and the inevitable finally happens in Ottawa. That's all coming up on The Rink. This week in hockey, it's been a week of embarrassments this past week. A few examples, for instance, my dad came up from Tucson and watched me skate, and he hasn't seen me skate since I was 6 years old. That's almost as embarrassing as, but not quite as embarrassing, as what happened to the Edmonton Oilers this week, getting lit up for 10 goals by the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, that was kind of fun, actually. I enjoyed that a lot.
Oh, really?
Drew Stafford, who grew up in Edmonton, he was their stick boy for a while, and got the hat trick that night, and it was the worst home loss in Oil history. Mm-hmm. And I think even Mac T said after the game, yeah, the fans had every right to boo. I think I was booing by the end of that game.
Oh, the fans weren't just booing. The fans were cheering, "We want 10.
Yes.
Yeah, the Oilers fans were cheering, "We want 10.
Yeah, so are we.
Which apparently happened once before. I think it was against Chicago, and they only got the 9. So
yeah, I remember us chanting, "We want 10 versus Philly a few years ago when we beat them 9-0 coming out of a lockout.
But your team was up ahead. When your own fans are cheering for the 10th goal against you.
Yeah. That's kind of satisfying.
Now,
that's kind of satisfying.
Did they do the goal? They pulled the goalie. They changed goalies, right?
Yeah, they did. I think Rolison started the game. He gave up 3 quick, and then Delasores came in, and he gave up a bunch, and it was just, it didn't really matter.
Now I did not get a chance to see the game. My question to you is, would it have made any difference if the trade that happened a couple of weeks ago with Matthew Garon to Pittsburgh had never happened?
Sincerely doubt it. The Sabres actually got to play on a clean sheet of ice that – because Edmonton's famed for their ice. They actually get to play on a clean sheet of ice, and just they hit the ground running. Danny Pae scored 10 seconds into the game. I think Stafford scored a minute after that, and it was 2-0 before anybody sat down. I mean, I honestly think somebody said that the guy who sang the anthems was actually a -2. So, it was one of those nights, and I think the Oilers were just caught completely unprepared. The Sabres apparently had a really good couple of practices coming out of the All-Star weekend. Lindy Ruff was very happy with them. He said so a couple times in interviews that they were real sharp. And they came out and they literally were playing pond hockey. And and interestingly that they came out against Calgary and they were flat and they went down 2-0. And I was watching the game on TSN and they asked James Patrick after the first period. So what's your team got to do to get back in the game? And then James Patrick said, "Forget about the 10 goals we scored last night. Calgary is a completely different team." So,
yeah. Well, if there's one thing that I've kind of come, I mean, I wouldn't say a conclusion necessarily, but the thought that keeps going through my head, because I'm not I didn't pay nearly as much attention to the Buffalo Sabres until I started doing this podcast with you, is that this year at least, it seems like the Buffalo Sabres are or have been as streaky as Kerry Lehtinen.
They're very streaky.
I don't understand.
I do. Their average age is 27. Mm-hmm. That most of the players who are in an extremely important role on the team are still very young. So watching guys like Vanek and Roy and Stafford and MacArthur and even Miller to a lesser extent, though Miller's been the model of consistency. I think he was just named third star for the month of January. He was outstanding. Young teams are going to go through this. They're going to go up. They're going to go down. That's what they're going to do. I mean, we watched two young teams go at it the other night. They were in Phoenix, and they're going to be on. They're playing Anaheim in about an hour and a half. It's about 8:45 when we're doing this on Monday night. Mm-hmm. And watching two young teams go at each other, you can see the inconsistency from period to period. They're like different teams, and it's what you have to live with when you're going to build through the draft and stick with players for as long as you feel you have to. And in that respect, the Sabres are the model organization for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were feeling pretty good about the Sabres and how they played against the Coyotes
I mean, I don't want to go on and on about this. There's a lot to talk about. But, yeah, the I thought the game where they shut Phoenix out in Phoenix 2-0 the other night, and they lost Spacek, Jaroslav Spacek, early in the first period. Mm-hmm. And they lost Jochen Hestin in that game as well. So now they're down actually four of their top six defensemen, two of their top prospects, but they've been fighting injuries down in Portland as well. And so for that, for the games against Calgary and no, sorry, for the for all of the Western road trip, they've already had Marc-Andre Gragnani up from Portland, and they actually played most of the game against Phoenix with four defensemen because Nathan Pate spent half the game in the box. So it was Ludman, Reve, Butler, and Gragnani on the back line for the Sabres against a nearly full Phoenix squad, and they were 7-for-7 on the PK.
Wow.
Yeah.
The thing for me is that with the Coyotes, I mean, the Coyotes are finally coming into their own and actually behaving like a hockey team, which we haven't seen for a couple of years. But, I mean, that was their sixth shutout of the year. The most recent one before the Buffalo Sabres being the 2-0 loss on January 29th to the Sharks.
Right.
Which, of course, you know, I don't feel bad ever about, you know, I mean, a loss to the Sharks this year is
right.
not something to really cry about. Yeah, exactly. But they did have like a they had Ducks beat them 2-0 January 4th, and then Chicago comes in and beats them 6-0 January 6th, yeah. Which was a game that I was at where they just plain didn't. It seemed like the Coyotes didn't even take the ice. So
yeah,
you know, I mean, that's not to burst your bubble or anything, but it's
not at all. I'm not arguing that because the Phoenix is offensively challenged, and they were missing Steve Reinprecht and Peter Mueller mm-hmm. on Saturday night as well. I mean, and it's something that came up in the broadcast because we got the Fox Sports Arizona broadcast, and Darren Pang and Dave Schrader talk about it a lot, that the Coyotes are a horrible 5-on-5,
right?
And which is something the Sabres were earlier in the season when they were losing, mm-hmm. and the minute that Buffalo got their 5-on-5 game back together is when they started winning, mm-hmm. and so that's the mark that I think that the one team has turned the corner and the other one is still having that problem. And I think that this is it's going to be a struggle for Phoenix for the rest of the season, but I think all the pieces are in place for that to be a very good hockey team if they can, you know, weather this financial situation that they're in. Apparently Bettman's supposed to talk on Wednesday and give the world a State of the Coyotes address, which apparently, according to what I heard during the broadcast, was that it's not nearly as bad as the State of the Sabres during the bankruptcy or the State of Ottawa during their bankruptcy and a couple other teams and even Pittsburgh before the new arena deal. So according to Bettman, even though Phoenix is losing a lot of money, they're still in some reasonable amount of financial shape for whatever, you know, for take that for whatever that means.
Well, I will take it for whatever it means, because the number one thing that you said right then was exactly what I'll take it for, and that's according to Bettman, because Bettman tends to put a shiny face on everything. I have not seen a State of the State address. Even lockout stuff was mm-hmm. kind of the shiny happy face. They were not going to we want to improve our financial stability. You know, it's mm-hmm. he is a spin doctor with that stuff. And from coming out of the All-Star game, he had all it was shiny happy ha ha. We're in great shape, no, even regardless of the economy, and we've obviously seen otherwise.
Right, I'm not going to disagree with that at all. Now, as the last point on what I saw about the Coyotes, Don Maloney, the GM, did say that his budget has not changed for the season, so they will not be sellers at the trade deadline simply because they're running out of money.
Right.
So for whatever it's worth, for what little money they have available, if they can pick up a piece or a part, he's going to attempt to do so.
He's going to try and actually stay a hockey team and weather the storm rather than
give up
and flop. I think he should too. They've obviously got some assets in there, and I think just about anybody would be pissed off if they absolutely give up and quit.
It would destroy whatever's left of that market out there. It really would. They have a good young team that's going to want to work, that does want to work and does want to win. Mm-hmm. They haven't learned how to win yet, and they haven't learned how to manufacture goals. That will come. I really do think that. So,
Well, when the big news, of course, came down from, well, with the Coyotes, big news that that their CEO was stepping down from and stepping away from the Coyotes. Pretty much everybody here, just in Tempe that I that I've been around, just went, oh well, whatever, who cares? Yeah, and mind you, this is this was leading up to the Cardinals being in the Super Bowl, so everybody was a lot more excited about that than regular season Phoenix hockey, of course. I want to move up the road a bit from Buffalo, which we were talking about. The least surprising news, mostly maybe is the most surprising part about it is how long it took, being that the Senators finally fired their head coach.
Yeah, they finally fired Craig Hartsburg. What is it? The Lisp is the only guy who can get this team to actually play, and every time he tries to substitute somebody else for his greatness, they fail miserably. I said it at the beginning of the season, the Sens were a one-line team with no transition game, and they had remade the a Stanley Cup finalist into the 1998 Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Craig Hartsburg is. We went from one team that couldn't score down in the desert to one team that can't score in Canada.
Yeah, I mean when you have twice as many losses as you do wins. I mean, because I'm counting those seven overtime losses as real losses. Yeah, you know, that's and it's your first year, and you know maybe you'd get a chance to redeem yourself in the second season, but. I also start to wonder if there was something else going on behind the scenes a little bit. I think that, you know, I mean, now that we have somebody fired in their first year as head coach, I'm starting to also look at Tony Granato of the Avalanche and wonder if his head is going to be on the chopping block since somebody cracked that seal. But but no, staying with the Senators, it's it's a team that hasn't looked all that different player wise from the Cup run.
Yeah. Pierre LeBrun had a great blog over at ESPN.com, and he listed off the five puck-moving defensemen they've lost in the last 2.5 years. That should pretty much tell you everything you need to know.
Wow.
That they have no coach is not the only issue. It's on the front page of ESPN.com. So here are the five names. Zdeno Chara, Joe Corvo, Tom Pricing, Andre Mazaros, and Wade Redden. The only guy that they've got who they can even conceive of being having a halfway decent first pass is Chris Phillips. Who's playing nothing but a shutdown role now.
Right.
So, and as I think I said to you before we started recording tonight, that, on top of the fact that they're a one-line team, two-thirds of that top line is a couple of immature, selfish players who won't come back and help out a defense that's incapable of giving them, a decent outlet and decent puck support so that they can even attempt to have transition for whatever values of transition you want to place on whatever pass they can get. Heatley and Spezza they're never going to step up to that plate. They're guys with they always have one foot outside the blue line waiting for the fast break, and those pucks aren't there. Those passes aren't there. And so the Senators are just really easy to trap and really easy to forecheck.
And we've been hearing about this possibility of a firing for so long that I was starting to wonder when I first saw this, how much did media assassination play into the role? But after looking at it a little bit more, I just started to think, this looks like a fit problem. This absolutely looks like a problem with fit.
It's a power problem with fit, and it's a problem with personnel. Remember, the Stanley Cup finalist team was assembled by John Muckler, not Brian Murray.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Mucker leaves as GM, and Murray is promoted to the front office as a reward for taking the team to the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in his oh-so-long career, and he's pretty much dismantled the team in two seasons.
He's dismantled the defense, but has the offense changed that much?
If you look at it, it's secondary scoring that got the team to the Stanley Cup Finals and was a dominant. Muckler was always able to get them second line scoring, veteran second line scoring to help out where they didn't have it before. And they don't have it now. The guys that they've put their money in, Antoine Vermette, Mike Fisher, and everyone else that they've homegrown, those guys haven't stepped up to provide the offense. And that's been the problem. So at the end of the day, you could say that, you know, the Sens finally ran out of quality draft picks to bring up through the system, because, I mean, they were the model of building from within for God knows how long. And has that well finally run dry? I don't know. Because you don't see anybody coming up from the coming up through the system and succeeding.
No.
You know, and that's the other thing. So as the high priced free agents leave, the Wade Reddins, the Mazzaros, blah 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 blah, there hasn't been anybody to fill in. I mean, at this point in time, with the Senators pretty much rocking for last place, and well, okay, you know, last place for every team that's not an AHL team, i.e. the Islanders. Murray playing hardball with Mazzaros in the offseason is looking like the dumbest move that any GM made in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you argue with it? So,
well, maybe that's just coming in and saying, well, I need to adhere to the cap. I need to, you know, do these, you know, I have to make sure that we have cap room, or I have to make sure that we have, you know, stay within whatever the set budget is or stuff like that. But, you know, fans certainly aren't looking at the budget when, you know, you're this far down being 2 years removed from a Stanley Cup finalist.
That's true. So how much did he pay? Paid Jarkko Ruotsu $1.3 million, which he didn't need to pay him.
Yeah.
Frankly, he just didn't need to pay him. You know, and then he paid Jason Smith $2.6 million. So you put those two guys together and you remove them from contention, and you know, you almost have enough money to sign Mazzaros, and you have $4 million with the cap space yet.
Yeah.
Sorry, you know, it's not looking, you know, or at least $1.5 million in cap space. The Sens had the room to sign Mazzaros. Murray chose not to. He played hardball, and now he doesn't have any transition game.
Mm-hmm.
And because he doesn't have any transition game, he's not winning any hockey games.
Well, I'm going to tell you this right now, that as soon, like within a week of now, I'm going to even forget that Hartsberg was part of the team, you know, was the head coach.
Yeah.
This has just absolutely been, I swear to God, a forgettable team as far as I'm concerned. I don't know mm-hmm. why, but all I ever seem to know and recognize about the Senators is that they're not doing very good. And that's it. It just seems like there's nothing other than Healy should be doing better. Spezza should be doing a lot better. Alfredson's the captain. That's it. And Gerber has been a pain and got sent down.
Ready? They've scored fewer goals than the Islanders. Okay. Ready? They've scored fewer goals than Nashville. And they've scored fewer goals than the vaunted Minnesota Wild.
How does a team that has the cash line on it score less goals than the Minnesota Wild or the Islanders? That's what I don't understand.
6-16-3 on the road. Too many veterans on that team to be 10 games under 500 on the road. Period. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously there's something else going on as well. Not only are they, but remember, this is the team that fell apart last season as well. Mm-hmm. So, there was obviously something going on in that locker room. There's obviously a split in there somewhere that we haven't heard anything about. And they haven't repaired it. So no. Moving Mazzaros in the offseason, you know, letting Redden walk, you know, whatever it was, they have not, you know, the people that were left in that locker room have not responded. Most likely, Chris Neal will probably be dealt at deadline because he's a UFA at the end of the year. There's a couple other guys firing Hartsberg now with this quote unquote season slipping away. The season has slipped away.
Yeah.
They're going to be moving people if they're not moving people at this point. Murray's an idiot.
I agree with that. There's no reason not to at this point.
Nope.
I don't get
nope.
it. You mentioned the Islanders, tomorrow night's Islanders game against the Bolts, against the Lightning.
Mm.
Their number one goalie, the only goalie that left that they started the season with, is not making the trip with the team, and nobody seems to know why. He threw a bit of a hissy fit after getting pulled in a game, and maybe that's why. But the thing for me is that here's a team that has been falling apart, finally starting to get a little bit back on the horse. You know, their last 10 games, they're 6-4. That's, you know, that's a hell of an improvement from where they started the season, but, you know, it's still not enough really to quite get them over the hump yet. But with Ole Kolzig out for the rest of the season, and now they aren't even taking their other season starting goaltender with them, just the drama that continues around that team.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the fact is that Mike Smith is the only guy who shows up every night.
Mm.
I mean, Tampa has 44 points, and you could probably lay about 35 of them at Mike Smith's feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, or on his in his glove, or on his pads, or whatever you want to, you know, however you want to extend the metaphor. And that's what's interesting, because if you as you said, they are starting. They were starting to get off the mat. They're 6-4 in their last 10, and by that metric, they're playing better than everybody that they're chasing for that final playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing well, except for Florida, really. But they're playing better than Carolina. They're playing better than Pittsburgh. And they're playing better than Toronto.
Who isn't playing better than Pittsburgh these days?
Well, you know, Vancouver. Mm. Got you there.
Yeah,
1-5-4. Okay. Well, it's 1-5-4 since Sundin came down from his blueberry pancake mountain.
No kidding. He's chosen the blueberry pancakes, but he still has not eaten them. Yeah, and the problem with we're talking about the Islanders, we're talking about the Lightning. We mentioned the Penguins, we're mentioning the Canucks, and we've got so many dogs right now. It's just the Canucks themselves are. It's an absolutely ridiculous situation with how everybody studied the team within an inch of its life because of Sundin's, coming right in, and all, and now what and what good has it brought them? When you myself and Eric talked, the thing that I said was, is it really worth it to go through all of this? And I remember both of you guys were telling me that he makes any team better by default because you can move people up lines, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to fault you that if he showed up in game shape, but even he admitted that he wasn't skating in his off time because it's not the same as a game. Well,
right.
I hate to tell you, buddy, but that it looks like you haven't been skating.
Yeah, I haven't seen him play. Honestly, I don't really know what's going on in Vancouver other than the fact that they can't win, and they've pretty much played themselves out of a playoff spot at this point. Now the bad news is they played themselves out of a playoff spot right now. The good news is that they could win their next game and be in fifth place.
Oh man.
Or fourth place. Sixth place, sorry. That's a testament to how tight the West is.
Again.
I was just saying that Tampa's only 11 points behind Carolina for everything that's happened with Tampa this year. If they continue to play 600 or even 650 hockey between now and the end of the season, they're going to be challenging for a playoff spot, for that last playoff spot, because mm-hmm. most of the teams that are playing in front of them, who they're trying to catch, are not capable of playing 650 hockey. In the West, that includes St. Louis, all the way down at the bottom of the conference, 44 points, the St. Louis Blues are in 15th place, and they are exactly 9 points out of a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Now, granted, they're 9 points out, but they're 5 wins behind Edmonton, who currently sits in 8th place, so the first tiebreaker goes to Edmonton, so they've got a lot of ground to make up. But the point is that
nobody's
out of contention in the West.
Well, I think that you have to look at the last 10 games more than anything, coming out of the All-Star break, the few games before, because now is when injuries are starting to take their toll.
Right.
The All-Star break that quote unquote maybe helped a team here or there. Mm-hmm. That fun is, wearing off. And if you take a look at the bottom of the West, if you look at the streak right now, and maybe for the Kings and the Blue Jackets who've only lost one, there's only two teams that have won their last game. And look at the Canucks, lost 8 in a row. Look at Colorado, right, lost 4 in a row. Look at the Coyotes, lost 3 in a row.
Right.
That's and they're in it, they're contending, but the last 10 games are really showing the mettle of some of these teams. Look at Calgary, 7-3-0.
Right.
Sharks, 7-3-0. Red Wings,
Dallas,
4-4-2. That's still another, That's still extra points. Yeah. Oh,
6,
Dallas.
2-2. And there they are. And they played. And we ragged Dallas early in the season. But the minute they got rid of Sean Avery,
bang.
Bang. They're right back in it. They're sitting in sixth. And they're sitting in a solid sixth position. Well, I would say solid sixth. But, there's 5 teams that are, have 53 points right now. But still, Dallas is in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And solidly in the mix. And that's a team that everybody should be wary of. because it's not that much different than the team that, you know, challenged for the Stanley Cup, for the Western Conference title last year. And, you know, Marty Turco's playing better. Sean Avery's gone, and the locker room seems to have repaired itself. So, you know, Dallas, all they have to do is continue playing 600, 650 hockey between now and the end of the season, and they will be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Bank on.
Heck, they could probably do it with 500 hockey at this point. It doesn't. I don't think they. Yeah, it's iffy, but I think that what we're going to see soon is, I don't see the Canucks making a gigantic comeback. They're only a point out. They're only a point out, basically. But
well,
or 2 points out. But I mean, the Kings, I think they're going to drop off. I hate to say it, but the mighty Colorado Avalanche, I think their season's done for. Mm-hmm. I think that 500 is going to get them in there. I really do. Maybe that's just me, but I mean, it seems like that it's a team that I just don't see as much. I don't see things being quite as tight coming up on the end of the season. I think it's going to loosen up quite a bit soon.
I think you're going to see three or four teams drop off. The three you mentioned, and to that list, I'd like to add Nashville. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Any team that's been as bad as Vancouver has been for this stretch of period of time, invariably something happens, and then they turn it over. They air out whatever it is they need to air out. They get it. They make the change that they need to make. Somebody says the right thing. They have a good game, whatever. And the Vancouver Canucks are too good, quote unquote, on paper to be playing this badly. So for very long. Mm-hmm. So I expect that ship to get righted. And as easily as Vancouver's lost 8 games in a row, they could just as easily win 8 games in a row. And then they're right back to where they were before, because everybody regresses back to the mean at some point. Having looked at that, you know, so far this season with my own team, 8-1-1 to start the season, and a horrible 10-game stretch where I think we've got, you know, 1 point out of 10 games, or not 2 points out of 10 games. And then after that, they got they had their rock bottom game, and they hit bottom, and then they picked themselves back up and put their game back together. I'd be very surprised if the Canucks don't, as a unit, figure out a way to start manufacturing wins.
Well, they better soon, or they're going to be staring down like a lot of unhappy fans with the Sundin signing. The Sundin signing was everybody's savior. You know, that was the Holy Grail, and now not so much.
No, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. So I don't have any emotion involved in the Canucks one way or the other. My gut feeling is that, you know, teams then tend to regress back to the mean. So,
well, looking at the last 10 games, the emotion that I have for them right now is pity. I feel very bad for them.
Fair enough.
I want to kind of go back to something we were talking about last week. The discussion that you and I had, and then the Edmonton Journal article about the scariest contracts. Mm-hmm. Some of the contracts that we were talking about. Things like, what was it, like 6 years, 5 years, you know,
right.
any dollar amount over $4 million thing, mm-hmm. you know, with long-term implications. And and what do we see this week? The Detroit Red Wings sign Henrik Zetterberg. That's what I'm calling him from now on. Thank you. They signed Zetterberg to a 12-year $6 million a year average salary, 12 years,
and $3 million.
The number one thing that stuck in my mind was nobody said it was a bad idea.
Yeah, because he's Henrik Zetterberg and he plays for Detroit and he's arguably one of the best players in the league.
And while that's the case, the immediate question when Alexander Ovechkin got his big 10-year contract was, what happens if he hurts himself? What happens if he gets injured? Nobody's saying that about this contract.
Yeah, I know.
To me, I mean, what the weirdest part about all of it? Well, not the weirdest part. One of the silliest parts of all it is, as soon as the contract signing happened, he was out.
Yeah,
he's been out for
three games.
He's still out. Well, he's missing tonight's game. Is it with the Blues? because of back spasms. He's got back problems right now. Well, spasms aren't like long-term.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, not necessarily long-term. But here's, you know, I'm going to say it. I think it's I think that 12 years is way too long for any guaranteed contract. Unless the NHL owners are going to push for non-guaranteed contracts along with their salary cap, they can stop pointing at the NFL as being the model, and 12 years is going to be too damn long.
That's one possibility that they're going to push for, but I don't see them renegotiating the terms of all of these contracts.
Oh, no.
Come the next CBA. So these contracts are going to be guaranteed regardless of what the next CBA brings. I don't think they can get away with retconning every contract in the NHL.
They did it coming out of the lockout, though. What was it, 25% rollback on all contracts?
Well, yeah, but that's that.
And also at the same time, and this is a little bit of apples and oranges, but it's still fruit. The equity payments are kind of a rollback as well, and an across the board thing.
Well, I think the issue is that for me, and this is the big issue for me, I don't understand how you give a contract that long to somebody who's 28 years old.
Yeah.
That's the part I don't understand. A guy like Zetterberg is going to have his best years up until he's about 35. Now, granted, the contract for the most part pays him a majority of the money in those first 6 or 7 years.
Right.
And he doesn't get paid much in the last 3 or 4. And that's really the purpose of the contract, is to front load it up front and then pay him, you know, money that you could either buy him out of at the end of the contract, or because you can't trade it.
Or it's
a $6 million cap hit at the end of you're not going to trade that. That's not a trade. Those aren't tradable dollars.
Is it still a $6 million cap hit
Absolutely. The average salary of the contract over the life of the contract is the cap number.
Okay.
So yeah, in year 12, when he's 39 going on 40,
he's still a $6 million cap.
He's a $6 million cap hit, even though he's a $1 million hit against $1 million budget hit now for teams that are, you know, for teams that are in the coming out of the rebuilding phase, and they probably have a lot of, you could figure out who would be in the market for a contract like that. But the truth of the matter is that Detroit would just buy it out, and it wouldn't cost them. It would cost them 2/3 of the remaining value of the contract, and that would be the end of it. And they'd keep the and then they'd have to carry $4 million against the cap for the remainder of the contract if they bought it out against the cap. Either way, I'm not a fan of this either. I'm not a fan of the 6 and 7 year contracts that I saw given out, you know, by some of the guys on my team. But at least those guys were 23, 24 years old. They were going to be paid the most money. They were going to be paid during their prime years, which are arguably now in the NHL from 24, 25 to 30 for forwards, and for defensemen, it's up until about 33. And then obviously for goaltenders, you can extend out to about 37. Right. I mean, but this is no different really than the Vinny LeCavalier or the Mike Richards or the Mika Kiprusoff contracts. They're all very similar, and the Danny Briere contract, they're all very similar in their way they're shaped in order to get around the cap.
Right.
The thing that floored me was that, Zetterberg took a hometown discount. I'm like,
A discount?
No, it's not a discount. He's going to get paid. He's not going to get paid $8 million a year or $9 million a year in these next 3 seasons.
Right.
So he's going to get paid $7.5 million for the next 6 seasons, which is a huge gamble. But, you know, but he's getting paid now for, you know, what he did previously.
Yeah.
That's an argument I saw a fan make on Puck Daddy. And that's just inanity. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, he was the player he was, making that kind of money in order to get the big payday last week.
Right.
You know, don't ever forget that part of it. You know, you know that's a contract year thing, right? Guys are always putting out their best performances on their contract years.
So. No, they always do, and they always talk about it. And that is something that people talk about a lot. We're going to see it pretty soon with a few other players. I mean, Nick Lidstrom signed for next year, but that's it.
Right.
You know, and $6 million, that's $6 million against whatever you have to do next year as well. I mean, this is not $6 million in today's dollars considering what's happening with the economy, what was will probably happen with the salary cap, with the escrow payments going up as high as they are, $6 million can be a hell of a bite in just a short couple of years that it doesn't seem like today.
I'm not going to argue that point, and that's
extremely. That's why I said it, because I knew that you'd agree with me.
Right? Yeah. I know. Thank you for the obvious and easy lead-in. But you're absolutely right. That I mean, I fundamentally believe that we're going to be seeing a contraction in revenues for at least a season or two, up until the point when we start to see what I think we're going to go into hyperinflation, or at least 20% year-over-year inflation, the 1970s-style inflation, at a worst-case scenario, or at a best-case scenario, for a protracted period of time, looking at what the Federal Reserve is doing, look at what the federal government is doing. So that's going to – but while that's working its way through the system, and that's going to take another, I think, 12 to 18 months to play out, which the NHL's, you know, budgeting and whatnot is then – based on, you know, is a little out of phase with that. So I think there's going to be a couple of really tough seasons where $6 million today is going to be expensive, as opposed to the way it's been, where you sign a guy for $4 million today and that $4 million becomes cheap because the calorie cap keeps going up. But right. I think that we're going to have that same thing in reverse for some of these contracts. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Marian Hossa in the offseason, for example.
I don't think he ever thought he was going to re-sign at this point. Mm-hmm. I just looking at it and thinking to myself, you know, the guy, he signed a one-year contract for a reason. You know, he was putting a cup ahead of anything else.
Sure.
And even if he goes long-term, I don't think he's going to make that, you know, sign for that kind of dollar. So.
Right. What I meant by that was whoever he was going to sign with, because it's pretty much a given now that he's not going to re-sign with the Red Wings.
Right.
That it's going to be interesting to see what kind of money he does get, because I don't know how much budget room there really is out there, except for the teams that are massively under the cap, like Los Angeles, for example, and a couple of others. But then, you know, the question comes into, you know, long-term health of financial health of the franchise, and there's plenty of teams out there who have plenty of cap space, but they don't have the money to pay. Regardless of what the cap is, so right. You know, I'd be interested to see whether or not we start to see a bit of price deflation for unrestricted free agents in the offseason. It'll be interesting.
Well, I wanted to bring up two more quick things before we wrap this puppy up. The Columbus Blue Jackets revealed that Uber goaltender Steve Mason had mono, and still has mono. And I know that some of the Blue Jackets fans are sweating, of course, considering how Pascal Leclerc has been injured, and before he was injured, he was doing pretty poorly. The question that was brought up was whether or not something like this is really going to hurt the Blue Jackets' chances of making it the playoffs, which for the first time are, you know, honestly pretty realistic.
Absolutely.
Myself, I look at it and I think, here's a team, you know, leaning on one goaltender too hard. And even though you see, like, let's say the New Jersey Devils completely lean on Martin Brodeur, their system allows somebody else to come in and, you know, and be able to play well, you know, and maybe not, you know, not that Clemenson is doing poorly on his own, but still, that here's a team that's pretty much, you know, there when you ride one goaltender and that goaltender's injured, you kind of get what comes to you.
Yeah. I mean, that's true, but Columbus doesn't really have a lot of other options. So is Mason going to continue playing, or is he done?
I think he's going to continue playing at some point, I'm sure. Of course, they signed Wade Dubowitz. Well, they picked him up off of waivers. But, you know, he certainly isn't Steve Mason.
No.
You know, so it's the situation has suddenly gotten interesting down in Columbus. And when it was interesting for how well they were doing, now it's suddenly interesting in, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Is this a train wreck?
Yeah. Well, you know, Columbus is another one of those teams that is in the process of coming into its own. Mm-hmm. And their road record shows it. Yeah, I mean, you fall back on very, very, very tried and true metrics. Teams that can't win on the road, that are below 500 on the road, generally don't. That doesn't usually translate well into long term success or season long success. So they're one of those five teams in the dog pile at 53 points tonight, as of tonight. Mono is not something you get over tomorrow.
No,
So, yeah, it's, you know, I wish them well.
Mm-hmm. The
I don't wish Ken Hitchcock well, but I feel bad for his players.
He called me and he asked if you had bought him that coffee you promised him.
No.
Finally, the Montreal Canadiens decided to throw back a little bit too far as I'm concerned, and put on some, 1912, 1913 style jerseys.
Yeah, they look like they had just got out of prison in a 1913 silent movie.
Yeah. aside from being a complete and utter hockey jersey fail on many, many reasons, mm-hmm. First off, they weren't even from the NHL. They were from the National Hockey Association,
right.
Which, of course, is the precursor to the NHL, hockey history, la-di-da. But still, the second thing, what do they have right in the middle of their jersey? A maple leaf.
Yeah.
And probably for the first time ever, hockey probably looked better on a low definition TV than a high def TV, because those jerseys are giving me a headache just looking at a static picture of them. I can't imagine how they were swirling around. Perhaps that was what the plan pretty was, well, so that they could try and beat the Bruins. And if I remember correctly, it didn't work.
No, it was pretty awful. I watched the game on. They streamed it on Yahoo yesterday, so I had it up and was watching it.
Oh, I can't imagine how that looks streaming. Oh, that
well, it was streamed in high def, so it looked just fine, actually. Yeah. It would have looked better, as you said, at low def, but it was what it was. I was like, oh my god, no! They went with horizontal stripes. Horizontal stripes are just not good.
It's not slimming. It's not
slimming. No, it's not slimming at
which
all.
Which might so, work for I mean, Carey Price, right against, but it certainly but it goes, didn't. I'm sorry.
Well, it goes right against the whole RBK edge, slimming effect thing. Yeah. So why would they? That just makes no sense.
No, and maybe it would be nice for the goaltender, look a little bit wider. No problem there. But apparently it didn't work out so well for Robert Lang, who severed his Achilles.
Yeah, tripping over his – he looked down. He must have looked down at his legs and went, oh, my God, and tripped over him.
What the hell's going on there?
ZOMG,
lucky they weren't playing against Jeff Hackett wasn't in that game, who of course retired because of vertigo.
Right.
Yeah. And Jeff Hackett, where is he now? Goaltender coach for the Colorado Avalanche. Hey, Avs, how's that working out?
Sorry.
Yeah. So my call out to the rest of the league, my challenge to them, please don't go any farther back with retro jerseys than 1945. Please.
I'll take your word for it that 1945 was the beginning of at least marginally acceptable by today's standards uniforms. As the last little jersey thing, I actually went to a mall the other night. And I did.
What that was like.
It wasn't too bad, other than the fact that I think I got nauseous about halfway through. But it was Saturday night, and I had the 2-year-old with my wife and my daughter were down. So we just had to get out of the house for a little while because my apartment is small. So we went to the mall. We actually got Sophie a little bit of ice cream, and then we walked around for a little while because she was going to be up late and we needed to. But the point of the story is that as we were finishing up our walk around Ye Stewart Hellhole, and Camille and I were going through and noting all of the stores that were in the process of either going out of business or were already there. One of them was a sports jersey store, one of those almost ubiquitous through shadow sports jersey stores. And, of course, it's South Florida or, South Central Florida. And I was actually impressed that there were hockey jerseys there. And wow. I noted that they had some old style, pre-arcade RBK Edge. Replicas, they're normally about $100 or whatever. And they were marked down to $25. Everything in the store was 75% off. But the coolest thing was they had a bunch of little kids' third jerseys. They were like, they were as tall as my monitor. I mean, they were, 18 inches tall. And the only one that really translated well was the Calgary Flames third jersey with the flaming horse. That was the only one that worked out well. They had the horrible Bruins third sweater with the friggin' the yellow one with the big bear on it, which was just, okay, someone shoot whoever approve that damn thing. Yeah, it was pretty
did they have the worst third jersey I think ever? Well,
which was
which to me was the Dallas Stars.
That one was pretty bad. I'm still reeling over the mustard yellow one from the Nashville Predators.
I hated the color, but at the same time, at least it had something similar to a logo near what the Predators had. I mean, it was an awful color choice, horrible color choice. But that black bull constellation Dallas Stars thing was.
Oh yeah.
Even yeah. I looked at it and said no. I mean, $25. No, I'm not going to buy it for.
I almost bought the replica Avs jersey they had there and sent it to you. almost, but I said no. I almost offered the guy. I almost walked in and said, "I'll take the Calgary one. They had them for like $15. I said, "I'll give you $5 for it." I almost. If I had $5 in my pocket, I would have dangled it in front of his face and said, "I'll take that for my daughter, who's right out there." but. You know,
well, it's a good thing because I have a new jersey on the way. Vitaly Kolesnik, Colorado Avalanche 10th anniversary jersey, game worn on the way. So
nice,
lovely eBay pickup. I'll make sure and put it on my blog soon.
Okay.
Well, cool. Thanks a lot, Tom. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, James. Anytime.
Well, thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. You can find Tom's writing over at nhl.fanhouse.com. You can find my blog at jerseysandhockeylove.com. And as always, you can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find links to some of the stuff that we talk about and instructions on how to subscribe in iTunes, along with other fun stuff. You can send us an email at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. As always, thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.